say something now. Green light.
Green light?
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. A little technical glitch, no problem. But I was thinking that, you know, this morning I was kind of feeling like, for some reason, you know, my brain was running about half speed. I mean, we had those kind of times where you just feel like, God, you know, what is this? What's going on? I was dealing with an infection earlier in this week. And I was thinking, you know, maybe it's still affecting me somehow. And I thought, well, now that we've had lunch, you know, I'll get a little energizing. I don't know if pizza would be considered brain food. But, you know, let's see, I feel like I'm a little more with it here now as we move into the afternoon. And our last study, and again, I have saved this for last, particularly because of everything else that builds upon it. Our last message I've entitled Preparing for the Teen Years. And it is our final look at this issue of parenting, and it's a look at those, what should I use the term, interesting teen years. You know, for some parents, you know, the mere thought of teenagers kind of like strikes fear in their hearts, you know, when you just hear that word. And yet, all the things that we talked about, in particular in our last message, the things we talked about preparing them for the battle, is so important in these years that we're talking about now, the teen years. Because unfortunately, there are times where the battle is lost during this period of time. And so the last message leads into what we want to talk about right now. And like I say, for some of us, just the thought of this is eerie for us. The teenagers are so typically, in our society today, are stereotyped as being just hopelessly stress-ridden and anti-parent and hormone-filled. And to some extent, that may be true, but it isn't true at the full extent that sometimes it's displayed as being. You know, how often, I wonder, have you been told, just wait for the teen years? And has anybody ever gotten anybody say that to you or come to you? Yeah, I was going to say, because I'm thinking, you know, at my years at the Sheriff's Department, I used to work with people, and most they all knew my family, they knew my children, and they really enjoyed them. But invariably, I would get regularly, they'd say, yeah, you know, your kids are really a pleasure to be around, but just wait for the teen years. Just wait for the teen years. It'll be a full-time headache. It'll be impossible communication, and it'll be the end of domestic peace as you know it. And, you know, they basically would say things, you know, if you want to hold them to a standard, they'll reject your values. If you insist on compliance, you're only going to get opposition. Basically, they were saying you might as well enjoy your children while they're young because it's not going to last. You know, maybe you've had some people say that to you before, but I want to encourage you that you don't need to accept the status quo notion that teens must rebel, because it's absolutely not true. It's not true at all. This notion really, in many ways, causes a lot of parents to give up before they even get started. And it may be that, you know, particularly your arrival at our seminar today was piqued because you said, well, I really want to hear what I need to do, because it is a scary time, because there's so many bad scenarios that have been out there and horror stories that we've heard, and so we want to really get the truth. How do we deal with these specific issues and the changes that are taking place in them, and how do I react to those things, and what's the best way to approach it? And that's why I say I just want to encourage you not to accept that kind of status quo and not to give up before you get started. And it's not that I say this from an unsympathetic attitude towards some that have had, you know, a lot of difficulty with teenage kids. But it's more so that this attitude has gotten to where it has so permeated our society in so many ways that parents are becoming apathetic. I mean, I've even heard parents say to me, it's hopeless. You know, you do the best you can for the first 12 or so years, and you just ride out the storm and hope you make the next 5 or 6 and survive it and go from there, because it is a hopeless time. And I just want to say that where there's no hope, then there's no vision. And it's not hopeless at all. The good news is that as parents, we can and we do make a difference, because God makes a difference. That's really it. God makes the difference, and God can restore. He can restore all things. Even when things feel like they went awry, there's always hope there. God can restore it. And God can make, in so many ways, we can see in our lives, He can make those areas of rough times and the rough path just as smooth as glass. And He does the same thing in regard to our children as they enter these years. And so I say, don't accept adolescent struggle as being inevitable, as so many people will try to tell you. Like I say, we're always in a position as parents to make a difference for them. And really, you know, you're in the process of making a difference right now as being here, because you're searching the Scriptures and seeing what God would say in regard to your children and bringing them up to know God and to know His ways. And as young parents, particularly if you have young, real young ones, it's important to strive and to foster that love and that trust, those trusting relationships early on. You want to establish them as soon as you can, because I tell you what, they're going to be essential when you get to those teen years. You just keep building upon it all along, of a trust, close relationship all the way through, because you're going to need it in the teen years, because we're going to see that's really what it all comes down to. A lot of teen rebellion is against relationship. It's not against authority. It's not against anything. It's because there's just not the strong, close, trusting relationship there. And that's what I say, too, raising good children, as people would call it, is not a matter of chance. It's not just a roll of the dice and say, well, let's hope this one turns out. It's a roll of a dice. You end up with kind of 50-50 odds, and that's not true. If we do it as God calls us to do it, if we follow the divine plan that He set before us, then, you know, we can make it right every time. And so it's really more not a matter of chance, but it's a matter of making right parenting choices and just doing the right thing as God has called us to do. You know, there's some that have suggested that adolescent or, you know, teen rebellion is somehow cemented to this onset of puberty. It's like affixed to the whole aspect of release of hormones. And if you really think about it, not that they don't play a role in that. I think hormones do play a role in some of the quirky things that happen during these years. But if hormones were the cause of all this stuff every time, then it would be universal. You'd be measurable in all societies and all cultures, because all kids go through the same changes. But yet, not all kids rebel. Not all kids have the same effects in terms of, you know, some of the dynamics involving relationships. If the genetic time clock it kicked in for our children and it just always brought about rebellion, then it would occur everywhere. But the reality is it doesn't occur that way. It is not like that. There are teens in many families that go through the same hormonal changes, but they don't rebel. So I have a hard time accepting what sometimes worldly sources will tell you. It's puberty. It's release of hormones. It's out of your hands. You can't do anything about it. Well, no, it doesn't make sense, because there's so many kids that don't rebel, and yet they go through those same things. And there's some that will speculate, well, if it's not hormones, it's a search for independence. You know, they're just trying to find their way. They're now entering into that aspect of adulthood, and so they're looking for independence. And I suspect there are some teens that are seeking independence, but really what we need to ask the question is what are they seeking independence from? What is it they're doing? And because I think that question is really central. And so often I think it's an escape for some kids. It's just an escape from relationship. It's not some pre-programmed genetic cue that kind of sends them off into a search for rebellion. But we're going to see, I think, the real answer to what is teenage rebellion is it really comes down to young children rebel against authority early on. But so often teenagers rebel against relationships. It's against relationships. And that's why the key to successful teen parenting is building strong, close, trusting relationships. And I've had talked with people before saying, I'm really struggling in this area. I feel like I'm losing my kids. They're moving away. And I say, well, this is when you got to buckle down and you got to say, you know what? What do we share in common? What are things that you like to do, and involve yourself in the things they like to do? Become part of what they're doing and be active in what they're doing. And again, if you've built some of those strong relationships when they're young, it flows real smoothly right into it. And you involve yourself in what they're doing. And then that way there is interaction, and you maintain that relationship and the trust that's there, and they'll look for your advice and they'll seek your advice, and the rebellion won't be there. The aspect of family identity is just absolutely a vital component in this, though. Many times when people are really struggling with that, it's not that it's not there, but it's the whole aspect of the family dinner. You need to get them engaged into that in terms of the fact that within the family, you all have the same shared values, the same, you know, the communication of loyalty and the planned family events and the memories that are set up there and the responsibilities to each other and just the importance of the family unit as a whole. Now, this is not to say that if you've done all these things, you won't have times of rebellion, because you know what? Kids are like anybody else. They all have a free will. You know, there's no guarantee for any of this. They still can make decisions that are wrong decisions, and you've done everything right, and you just learn to say, well, you know what? I've just got to wait till God gets a hold of them then. So I'm not here to say that you can 100% alleviate the problem. We can do what we need to do to make it rare, but it's still something that it comes back to them and what their will is in the bottom line. You know, as they reach adulthood, they make decisions that sometimes we don't agree with. But as I say, the bottom line is that also in this, that peer pressure on your child is only as strong as the family identity is weak. And there's a lot of truth in that too, because if the family identity is very strong, they won't seek so much the outside advice. But if you have a very strong family identity in terms of that core aspect, they'll still hold to that. They're looking for that sort of thing. Well, we looked previously at a great proclamation, and really last time we were together, this would have been back a month ago, that was made by Joshua, if you remember. Joshua had gathered the people together in a place called Shechem, and we kind of referred to it, and that's where he made that great personal declaration and a determination in his life where he said, as for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. It's such a wonderful statement of really what his convictions were and his commitment to his family and what he really wanted to set up as a legacy, where he said, hey, I've come to this conclusion after all the battles and all the things I've been involved in, how God's used me in great ways, it all comes down to this. As for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. And we discussed in that time how important it is for us to hold the line and be like Joshua, as you remember, where God had encouraged him to be strong and to be courageous. And in that regard, Joshua was a man who would not compromise. He was going to be strong, and he was going to be determined in his role of directing and molding and shaping and mentoring his children and setting up the legacy in his household that it would all be about serving the Lord. That's what our household would be about. We talked a little about the Apostle John in 3 John, where he said, I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. Because really, in the end, it's all about our instruction, and it's all about those spiritual eternals, if I can use that term. It's about instructing the spiritual eternals, all the aspects of who God is and what God is doing in our life and the character issues and all the things, those eternal principles that we want to make sure that we instruct and we get into their hearts. And really, so often today, there seems to be a lot of attention. Right? It probably isn't any different than any other time. There's so much attention directed toward physical externals, right? I mean, we live close to Hollywood, so, and you know, anybody's got a TV in their house, you know, everything is really about the external aspect. It's the adorning and the addressing what's happening on the outside, and yet inside, you wonder what's there. And you know, Hollywood's an incredible example of that. You know, we see these Hollywood stars and stuff, and yeah, they've got the perfect face and they got just all the right externals, but they're so messed up inside. You know, they're in department stores tucking things under their shirt and walking out the store, and you're going, you know, what's wrong with you? You know, and you know, there's more. You know, that interview with Whitney Houston. I mean, I like some of the things she's done, and even that movie she was in, I really did enjoy. And you know, I've always heard that she's a Christian and stuff, but I was just disappointed when I heard some of the things there. I mean, it's a beautiful woman with great talents, and yet, man, she's all messed up inside. It's because of the external adorning is all perfect. But what about the eternal, the spiritual eternals that are really within us? Those are what we want to communicate. And when we look at the emphasis upon physical external aspects, as parents, you know, there's in some ways we can fail in this regard too, in putting too much emphasis on that. You know, we can make sure that our children are in a good house and they have a neat appearance, and you know, they're playing all the right sports and they're wearing all the current fashions, and then they're in the right clubs and the right activities. You know, they're in Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, and they're in Little League and soccer. And again, those things themselves, there's nothing wrong with those. I mean, those are actually all good things, but they can't be the emphasis, because we know they're not the most important things. You know, as long as we understand that those types of things, those external adornings and those external activities, as long as we realize that those are secondary, to those spiritual eternal principles. They're secondary to their walk with their Lord, with the Lord, and their desire to serve Him and their desire to put Him first in their life, and other character issues like virtue and integrity and morality, those spiritual eternals that are so important to have in their heart. And if we fail at addressing those and making those the importance and making those the priority in our children, they're going to face a much greater opportunity for invasion by the enemy, as we just looked at in our last session, because they won't have the tools that they need to be prepared to face the enemy and face the attacks and the temptations and all things that come. External adornings, external activities do nothing to protect you there, but those spiritual eternals do. Those are things that will protect them and help them to be victorious in those times when difficulty comes and Satan's attacks comes. Because again, as we know, it's his desire, referring to Satan, to take their hearts and to destroy their lives. And many times it's through spiritual manipulation, really, that they'll walk into their minds and they'll wreak havoc if they don't have those spiritual foundations of eternal truths, of the eternal truths of the gospel of Christ and all that is enveloped in a true walk with God. And I think, the last generations of parents, as we talked a little about some of the philosophies that have been, developed in that, it still goes around. I don't know, if you're around people, you've probably heard them, because I've heard, it's in secular types of events, not in the church so much, but you hear people that say, well, you know what, that's all great, but I'm going to let my kid make their own decision. Ultimately, I want them to make their own decisions, and I want them to choose their own path, whatever that is. I want to let them discover whatever path really they're led to go into. I just want to give them the freedom to just go on their own and find their own way. And it's a real common thing. And you even hear interviews like that. Well, no, I'm not going to influence my children into my way of thinking. I just want them to discover their own, because then they'll really take hold of it, because it was their own. And the more I study the word, and the more I look at our world, the more I realize that that kind of thinking is a prescription for disaster. It really is. To just leave it to themselves, to just find on their own, especially at young ages when they're not prepared and they don't really have the wisdom to do that. And I think in many ways it signals the enemy's marching orders to come in. Oh, great. You're not going to influence them anyway. You're not going to try to show them the way. Then I'll show them a way and influence them that way. If we don't preach really, but if we don't teach the principle and truth that we're speaking of here, someone else will. If whether it's through movies or through video games or through TV or neighbors or friends or whatever it is, someone else will instill into them what they think are principle values and important things. But we have the truth. And that's why we've been studying it, so that we can get a firm foundation on what those spiritual eternals are, and we could communicate them to our family and instill them and pass them on to our children and be like Joshua is here, who's a man who lived by the principles of the Bible, and he dedicated himself in a proclamation that I'm going to communicate these principles to my family and we are going to live by them. And I know that in many ways, as I speak to you, I'm just reaffirming things that you already know. I'm telling you things that, yeah, I agree with all that, and I know that I'm just reaffirming it. And I know that for the most part, the group that's here represents a group that do take these things to heart, that you are instructing your children, and you do protect, and you are sheltering. But as our children grow, and as they mature, and as they advance through the years, we have to continue to prepare them. And so ultimately, the idea is so that they themselves, that is outside of our presence and outside of our protection, they themselves will be alert and ready for what is out there, prepared for the things that are going to come, the attacks that are going to come towards them, and the battle that's there, so that they can survive it and not suffer some of the disastrous consequences. And we're going to look at one of those now as we look at the story of Dinah and Shechem. It's a story that you've probably heard before. Only we're just going to put a twist on it in terms of we're going to make a direct application to preparing our children for things that they're going to face in life, and particularly for those teenage years that can be so difficult. Again, as I said before, our children are the fruit of our love and the fruit of our labor. And you've spent so much time investing in that. We want to make sure that we prepare them so they are victorious. And we also want to make sure that they are the fruit of God's light in action. An attitude as they set out in this world. Because we're going to have to release them And when they get towards teenage years, they're getting closer and closer where they go to college, they go out in there, and, you know, we could protect them, but we want to prepare them so when they do go out, they're ready to face it, and they are victorious. That's the whole objective here. The biblical picture, I think, is remarkable as we look at this story of Dinah and Shechem. And just to give you a little background, as we've referred to Joshua, where Joshua makes this proclamation in this place called Shechem, that he's drawn the nation, we're going to go now, though, back to, at the same location. We're going to look at it in Genesis, which is several years prior to Joshua, obviously. But interestingly, it's in the same place. The same place that Joshua determined that here I'm going to make my stand. This is here where my house and my household, and we're going to live by God's principles, and I'm going to instruct and communicate to my family. Me and my house, we're going to live this way. He makes a determination. The same exact place, the same location we find here in Genesis 34, we find Jacob and his family at the same location, and it's an interesting story. It's a sad story, but I think there's some interesting dynamics that we could look at in terms of preparing our children for these teenage years. I'm going to pick it up in Genesis chapter 34, and we're going to look at verses 1 through 9. It says, "Now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had borne to Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, prince of the country, saw her, he took her and lay with her and violated her. His soul was strongly attracted to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, and he loved the young woman and spoke kindly to the young woman. So Shechem spoke to his father Hamor, saying, 'Get me this young woman as a wife.' And Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah, his daughter. Now the sons were with, his sons were with his livestock in the field. So Jacob held his peace until they came. Then Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak with him. And the sons of Jacob came in from the field, and when they heard it, and the men were grieved and were very angry, because he had done a disgraceful thing in Israel by lying with Jacob's daughter, a thing which ought not to be done. But Hamor spoke to them, saying, 'The soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. Please give her to him as a wife, and make marriages with us, and give your daughters to us, and take our daughters to yourselves.'" You know, you read a story like this, and I realize, I mean, we're talking, this is in Genesis, the time of Jacob. This is like 3,000 years ago. But yet, you look at this incident, and you say, you know what? I could have read about this in the register this morning. I mean, it's the same sort of things that happened here. And we're going to see failures in parenting, I think, we can infer from this on both sides of the family, both on Dinah's side and on Shechem's side, that led to this horrible, really, disaster for these young people and where they ended up. And again, the idea of it is we want to look at, is we want to see what were the shortcomings. What did those families, what did those parents fail to do that brought about at least the opportunity for this thing to occur that is so destructive? And I want to influence you in terms of looking at how, as our children enter those years where they're old enough where they may face circumstances like this that happen, that they're prepared to be, again, victorious in it because we've given them the right instruction. We've prepared them for those teen years and the temptations and the difficulties they're likely to face there. So first I want to look at Dinah. I want to look a little bit about what we know about her, what we know about the circumstances she was under, and then we're going to look a little bit and see what should have been done that wasn't done here that allowed some of these things to happen. First thing we do know about Dinah is that she's innocent and that she's looking or seeking new experiences, and apparently she's seeking new relationships. Again, we know that because the first verse we see that it says she went to go seek out the daughters of the land. She left the family unit in terms of what was there, and she was looking for relationships outside of that, obviously because it wasn't being met at home. So she was making an inquiry about those that were in the land. And we see here that it gets her in trouble because I think she went about it unprepared. She wasn't adequately prepared to go into that kind of environment, into that kind of issue within the city, and she got eaten, so to speak. You know what I mean? She got just engulfed by the jaws of Satan, really, but using Shechem to do it. It just overwhelmed her. But the first thing we know, and the best that we know, is that She is one daughter in a family of 12 siblings. At this point in time, we know of Jacob's son. There are 11 sons, and Jacob has one daughter, Dinah. Benjamin isn't born until the next chapter, until you get in the next chapter, so we don't have quite the 12 sons yet, but they have 11 at this point in time. And since we know she's the only daughter, obviously she doesn't have any sisters, and she just has brothers that I suspect probably ignored her. I make that inference because we know a lot about these guys, right? We know a lot about these sons of Jacob and really how messed up some of these guys were. I mean, the only exception being Joseph. And I suspect that as we looked at these guys, we're probably completely consumed with themselves because we see that pattern in other times when we're reading about them and when they go to dispose of Joseph and the things they didn't like about him. And they were really very selfish guys consumed with themselves. And I suspect that Dinah here being the one daughter in a family of 11 other sibling boys, she was pretty much left to herself because they were more interested in their own thing. And we also know at this time that girls were not thought of as being as important as sons. Thank goodness Christ has changed that. But particularly in these days, we know that there wasn't a lot of importance put upon women. And that particularly as daughters, they weren't recognized with the same value that sons were recognized. And so I'm sure that was a burden she's carrying around too. That was probably bugging her. She's not getting any really relationship with her brothers because they're all off doing their own thing. She's all by herself as the only daughter. On top of that, she's a woman in a culture and a society that didn't really look at her importance very highly, and so I'm sure she's feeling a bit slighted. We also know, though, that she was the daughter of Leah. Now, we also know that story real well, too, right? The aspect that Leah being one of the wives of Jacob, but was she his preference? We know she wasn't. We know his preference was Rachel, and he basically got scammed and ended up with Leah. And so she's not only this only daughter within the family, but she's the daughter of the wife that Jacob kind of got stuck with. So you just wonder if that's playing a role in this too, in terms of where she's at, since she knows that, you know what, my dad really prefers my stepmom, Rachel, more than he does my mom, Leah. And so I suspect she's kind of out of the loop there too, and it's quite possible that Dinah obviously knew Jacob's preference for the other woman. And I just wonder if he really wasn't paying as much attention to her, because we already know that he showed preferences to both Joseph and Benjamin. Why? Because they were the offspring of Rachel. And he made much closer attention and cared more about them than the others. So I have a feeling she didn't get a lot of attention from Dad either. You see how this thing is setting up. She's the only daughter. She's in a society that slights women. Her father doesn't care much about her from that regard. He's spent a lot of attention with her because she's the daughter of the other woman, supposedly, basically. And we also know that both Leah and Rachel, through these passages of Scripture, had given their handmaidens, Bilhah and Zilpah, to Jacob as well. And of course, there were sons that were generated from that. So I look at Dinah and I'm thinking, she basically has four moms. She's got four women in the house, brothers that don't give a whip really about her, and a dad that's too consumed with other things and doesn't really care either. You know, and you've heard what's the saying, you know, there's nothing worse than, what, two women in a kitchen. Well, can you imagine four of them? You know, I mean, I'm sure in a lot of ways she just felt lost in the crowd. And this family is a crowd, but there's some dynamics in the family that are out of kilter. And we can see all these things kind of brewing as we look at what's happening in Dinah's life, and you start looking at this going, man, there's got to be some tough times here for this young woman. And she is struggling, and that's why I think when we get to verse 1, we see Dinah is seeking the daughters of the land in the city of Shechem. And I long to say that she's struggling with her own identity. And she's longing for some type of relationship. She's longing for some type of companionship that she's not getting at home. Because of what's happening at home. It's not there. You see, that's why you've heard me talking about the importance of a trusting relationship. There is no trusting relationship, as I kind of analyze this thing, at home. And when it's not there at home for our teens, they'll look for it outside the home. And that's dangerous, because there are wolves out there. There are Shechems out there. And sometimes they'll compromise themselves to seek out relationship, even with a Shechem, because they don't have one at home. Again, trusting family relationships. It is so important in the teen years. It's got to be there. So basically, Dinah goes out and we see seeking the daughters in the land, and she sees a lifestyle that's, you know, across the plain. Again, as they're camped up on the hill across this plain area there of Shechem, I'm sure she had a good view across the plain of this city that was down there. And she could see that there were other daughters of Shechem, so to speak, of the city, other women down there. She's going, I've got no relationship up here. I don't have a relationship with my mom. I don't have a relationship with my dad. I don't have a relationship with my brothers. I just want somebody I can have companionship and relationship with because I've got no relationship here. And we see that she goes and she seeks it out. It's interesting, Josephus indicates that the city of Shechem was a party city. You know, and we get a lot of insight from Josephus many times, who gives us some of the historical background. We get a better understanding of what's there, and he's saying, this was a party town. And so you just wonder if across the plain, she didn't hear of things going on down in that city, and she sees activity, she's going, man, I wonder what it's like down there. Because I know what it's like up here. I mean, I'm just lost in the crowd up here. I don't have anybody I could talk with. I don't have anybody I could really share my feelings with. I don't really have anything that I could really have that kind of enjoyment of companionship. But man, look what they're doing down there. And I want to pause there for a minute, because that can happen to our children. You see how this is all setting up. We can see how it's coming together. Is that they can see a lifestyle, and they can see activities that are outside of the home, that are outside the protection of the home, and they may get to where they really desire to enter it, or it may be that they're required to enter it. And I say that because sometimes when it gets to the point where they go off to school and they go to college, they're in a circumstance where they're required to enter, basically, the city of Shechem. And the question for you and me as we're looking at preparing for the teen years, have we prepared them to enter a city of Shechem? Do they have those strong relationships at home so they're not seeking out companionship in circumstances where they don't really know what the dynamics are? There's stuff that's happening in Shechem. She has no idea what she's walking into. That's why I say she's innocent. She's ignorant of the things that are out there and the things that could basically gobble her up, and she enters into an area that causes real trouble for her. And I say that sometimes not only will they either desire to enter it because the right relationship isn't set up at home that makes them say, I just want to be here because this is where I'm really happy. My family really meets my needs in this regard, in the companionship and the enjoyment of my family life. But if it's not there, they may seek it on the outside, or they may, like I say, have to enter it. That means to go to college, or to, you know, they're invited to certain entertainment venues. And I want to tell you that there's no guarantee when you send them out that it'll be a perfect world that you send them into, even if you send them to Christian college. And I say this, some of you will know, there are places that are called Christian colleges, but there's stuff that happens in those colleges that would never happen in your home. You know, we like to think, oh yeah, they're going to a Christian college, everything's going to be good there. There's still weird stuff that happens. There's still things that are there that are like Shechem, even in a Christian college. And, you know, that's just the way things are. It's the way the world is. That's why we got to prepare them, even if we think they're going to a safer environment. And I agree that would be a safer environment. All the same stuff is still there. So the question, as we look at this teen issue, is, have we prepared them? Have we prepared them to enter those kind of environments that are there? And we need to provide, again, as I said, make sure we've provided those spiritual eternals so that they can be victorious in those circumstances. Because without providing the right character values, the things that we've been discussing and talking about, the self-control issues, the responsibility, the purity, the integrity, the morality, without really warning them and preparing them, they could walk into trouble. Even go into a Christian college, you can walk into trouble there because of the things that do take place there. And our children can be drawn by the enemy as he tries to take their hearts, and they may even be in a situation where they are going to seek out, you know, relationships that are out there. They desire to go and make those relationships that are there. And as mom and dad, this is where we need to, you know, take the opportunity to tell our kids, you know, and instruct them and prepare them to beware. We've had these discussions at home, even with our girls, if they've gone to college. Be careful. Be careful, because you need to understand, if you go there, and when you go there, into those environments, that there is danger. there's always potential danger because there are Shechems out there. And there are Shechems in Christian colleges. There are Shechems in Christian venues. They're, you know, whatever. We think they're perfectly. They're still out there. And like I say, there are times we just need to sit them down and prepare them. That's part of the teen years too, is preparing them. Let them know, as you enter into this stage of life, there are things that you need to be aware of and you need to be careful of. And that one of those is that there are a lot of guys out there for your daughters. There are a lot of guys out there that are after one thing. And we know what that one thing is. We don't really have to go too much further with that. And it'd be nice if we could just have to make that warning to our daughters only. But in today's society, guess what? You need to warn your sons too. Because believe it or not, there are a lot of girls out there that are after one thing. I mean, it's come all the way around today in today's society that it works both ways. It's not just your daughters, but your sons too. And so, you know what? Be prepared and be careful. Don't allow it to be a snare to you, as we looked at last time. Don't let it become that, because we need to be careful. And we certainly, when we send them out, we want to send them out with thorough instruction. Because it's true that, for our children to become responsible, that there is a point where they have to eventually encounter these kinds of circumstances. And again, at that point, it will to demonstrate their trustworthiness and their responsibility. But we don't want to put them in that situation until they've had the right instruction. We don't want to throw them out there as innocent lambs just to be consumed by some of the things that are out there. And what I see about this story, and what I'm trying to get to, is we look in the story of Dinah, it doesn't appear to me that anybody did that for Dinah. She sees this city across the plain, and she decides to venture out and to discover what's there, seeking new relationships, seeking companionship that she doesn't have. But nobody set her down and said, whoa, whoa, whoa. Okay, look, if you have to go down there, you need to know this. Be careful. Beware. Because there's Shechems out there. That same sort of thing is out there. And I look at this and I see nobody did it. Her dad doesn't appear. I know it doesn't say it here, but just based upon the events that transpired, it doesn't look like dad said anything to her. Brothers didn't say anything to her. Moms didn't say anything to her. And it turned into disaster. And that's why I say it's always important for us to check in with our teens or our children as they're turning that in the age group regularly, just to see how they're doing. Just to see if, you know, and just, it doesn't always have to be a straight up question to them, but just in your conversation with them to see, are you doing okay? Are you struggling? You know, what's happening in these areas? And you can see whether there needs to be more instruction, or are they encountering circumstances you realize from your conversation that, you know what, let me give you some heads up on some of these things so you're aware of it. So often if our children go in aware of the circumstance, when they see it developing, they know to get out of there. And it doesn't catch them by surprise in that regard. And we want to continue that instruction, even when they're younger, but right through the teen years and beyond, if they're still under your roof. If they're beyond teen, continue to say, you know, be careful when you're out there and watch what's going on. We want to continue to communicate and continue to build those strong, trusting relationships so they don't feel the compulsion to go out and try to find these relationships they don't feel like they have at home. And that's why I guess my warning to all of us is, and I think it's kind of a biblical warning, is that for your sons and your daughters, as they grow older, there's always a Shechem out there. And it's true. There's always one out there, if need be. And as I said, if Satan wants to consume our kids, he'll use a Shechem to do it too, if he can, to just deceive and to manipulate and to render them ineffectual in that regard. So we see the issues with Dinah, and we see kind of what happened there and some of the breakdowns on Jacob's side of his family that didn't happen. But what about Shechem? You know, I mean, what the dynamics behind this guy? You know, what has caused him to be the way he is and developed as he is? And again, I see more problems on this side as well, of failures without not preparing these children or these young adults. And what I see about Shechem is you can see it in the scripture, he appears to be a spoiled kid. He's a guy that gets what he wants. He's used to getting what he wants. In fact, you know, it tells us here that dad, Hamor, is a leader in the city. He's basically, in my Bible dictionary, when I looked it up, it listed him as the original clan ancestor of the city of Shechem. He was basically like the mayor. This is kind of the guy in charge. He was kind of involved in all this stuff. And so here's Shechem. He's like the mayor's kid. You know, the main guy, he's the offspring of that. And I suspect that he's a young man who gets what he wants. When he sees it, he gets it. And I guess that, you know, the way to draw this in terms of application for us, unfortunately, it's like a lot of young men in Southern Orange County. I mean, you think about it. We live in an affluential area. There are a lot of Shechems out there who are used to getting what they want. And there's a lot of wealth. So if Shechem wants a car, he gets a car. If he wants this, he gets that. If he wants a stereo, he gets that. He's used to getting those things. He's not used to having anybody say no to him. And I see that in this character here. And, you know, we see these types that are like that. They're so used to getting what they want. And there's never any restrictions. They've never had to, as we said, say no to themselves. So they don't have the self-control. I don't see that in this young man either. Certainly not, based upon his activities. There's no self-control there either. You know, and sometimes it starts when, you know, they're real little and they just want their passy, you know, a little pacifier, you know, to kind of divert reality. There's nothing wrong with that, obviously. But the problem is it goes from there and it becomes, you know, he wants a Nintendo and he's got to have it. He's got to have the Nintendo. I need that real bad. And then suddenly they develop further and now I need a car. I need a car really bad. This will fulfill me. I need a car. Dad, I got to have a car. Gets a car. And then it's, now I need a woman. And there's no development of self-control. There's no development of responsibility in this young man. It was never instilled in him at home. And I think of him today that he'd be the kind of kid that, you know, he's the high school or young college-age kid who's got the sports car. He's the real cool-looking dude. He's got all the right clothes. He's got just the right look. He's probably good-looking. And he's it, you know. And everybody looks at him and goes, man, this guy is it. And he's accustomed to getting out of trouble through dad's influence. Because you see here, he seeks out his dad to fix the situation. Dad's the mayor. Dad has all the influence. And so dad will get me out of trouble. And because of this, he takes a lot of risky, reckless chances. You know, there's people like that all over our society. Because there's a lot of people, just they don't take responsibility for anything. And this is a guy who has no responsibility. He has no self-control. They don't take responsibility for anything. And if something does happen, dad gets them out of trouble. So what does that mean? It means they'll take risky chances that they may not normally take. Because why not? I'm not responsible. Dad will get me out of it. And so again, it's a disaster. He's just thinking, here comes a Dinah. You know, an attractive, innocent female, I'll take the chance. What could happen to me? Dad'll get me out of it. I'm used to getting what I want. It's the same sort of thing. And here we see Shechem, he's looking for Dinah. Again, this unaware young female who, you see this meeting, it's not like some chance meeting, but this meeting, here's Shechem, a guy who just, he's looking for a woman like this and he's used to just taking what he sees. And here comes this young innocent woman and she is looking for relationship. She's looking for companionship that she's not getting at home. The only problem is now she's looking in all the wrong places for it. And it gets her into trouble. So in verse 2, as we look for this, we see that Shechem saw her. Again, he's used to getting what he wants, so he sees her. He takes her, he lies with her, and he violates her. And, you know, you look at this and you think, you know, this is such a sad story. It's a sad story because I think in many ways it could have been prevented through proper instruction and attention by parents on both sides. Not just on Dinah's side, but on both sides. Shechem's side as well. There's all kinds of failures that took place on there. And it's just made this situation worse. Well, as we jump down into verse 4, you know, basically after this deed has occurred, Shechem goes to dad. And he tells dad, he says, I found this girl, and I love her, and I want you to get her for me. Oh, it just sounds weird when I read through that. I go, what? You know, I look at this, I go, he's not in love with this girl. He doesn't even know her. She comes in from the hill country, drops down in there, and he does this thing with her, and he says, yeah, I love her, and dad, get her for me. Go make the arrangements. I want this one. You know, get her for me. It's probably one of a dozen that he has, since, you know, there was so much of that activity at this time in terms of men that had all kinds of women. And so in verse 6, or rather in verse 8, this is the part that slays me. Hamor, dad for Shechem, goes to Jacob and he says, look, here's the story. My son wants your daughter. So what do we need to do to work this thing out? I mean, it's just typical of the guy. He's the mayor of the city. He's got all the connections. He's got all the influence. And he's used to just manipulating a deal. And so he's thinking, let's make a deal here. Okay? My son wants your daughter. So what do we have to do to fix this? What do you need from me? You know? And this whole attitude that I draw from this is, it slays me because it's not apologetic at all. You don't see Hamor going to Jacob and saying, you know what? I want to be real straight up with you. We need to apologize. My son behaved horribly. He behaved badly and he did a very wrong thing to your daughter. And we are undone in grief and sorrow. And we are greatly concerned for your daughter because of what he's done. You don't get that at all here. None of that activity is here. Hamor comes in and says, look, my son wants your daughter. What do we need to do? How do we make this deal? How can we make this work? And then I'll call him Einstein. I think this guy's such a jerk. Hamor. He makes this intelligent statement. He says, okay, I've got it. I've got the way we sort this out. How about we do this? Why don't all of my sons sleep with your daughters? Okay. And all of your sons can sleep with my daughters, and we'll just intermix here. How does that work? I'm thinking, this guy is such a piece of work. He really is. I mean, you look at it, you can't believe this guy, you know. He's not apologetic. He's not coming in remorse and regret for what his son did. He says, let's just intermix here, you know. Send your sons over. I'll send my daughters over. It'll be great. You know, we'll make it work. I'm reluctant to say this, but I looked up Hamor's name in a Hebrew dictionary, and his name literally means an ass. And I'm sorry to be so blunt in church to say that, but that's what his name is. And I'm thinking, well, that perfectly fits this guy, you know. And a little does he know when everybody calls him by his name what they're really calling him all the time. And I'm thinking, it's perfect. That's exactly what he is. But Shechem, in this case, never learns responsibility. He never learns the consequences of reality. And I think so many ways it's because dad doesn't know it. And dad doesn't demonstrate it. And so what happens is Shechem patterns his life after dad. God, how many times have we seen that in our time together? We've looked at so many circumstances of that. We looked at it in, you know, throughout. We were looking at, you know, being the parent, priest, and legacy builder. And how over and over again there was this legacy that dad put forth, either good or bad, and how the offspring basically followed it down the line. And again, we see it here. Shechem's just like dad. He's just going to make a deal. Let's make it work. It doesn't matter if we step on people to do it. We just finish the job and go on from there. And so the problem that I see here as we start to wind this down a little bit, the problem I see is that someone should have set Dinah down. And should have set her down and told her, look, there's one thing that this guy's after, and you need to know it. Should have set her down and said, look, if you go down in that city, be careful. Because there's people down there that will violate you and won't care about doing it. And you need to be ready and be aware of that situation. Secondly, someone should have set Shechem down. Okay, on that side of the family, somebody should have set him down and said, look, the right passage to a woman, the privilege and possession of a woman, is through the means of marriage, dude. Not what you think it is. You know, it's an agreement that you make of a promise before God that you will love and protect and care for better, for worse, for richer and poor, in sickness and in health, as long as you live. That's the bond that's supposed to be there. It's called wedlock. I think that's a great term. Wedlock. It's a one flesh relationship. It's not like some modern definitions of marriage being, you know, well, it's a mutual agreement between partners. You know, it's a get out of here. It's wedlock. And somebody should have told Shechem, this is not the way you go about it. Okay? You go about it the right way, the proper way. And nobody set him down and set him straight. You can see the failures on both sides in terms of this teenage. And that's why the relationships are all messed up here. And you're going to see, I'm going to draw this back in because relationships are so important. She didn't have the right relationship at home as a teenager, and neither did Shechem in that regard. And there was just poor parenting on both sides. Our children need to know that when it comes time to, you know, to date or in relationships with others of the opposite sex, that it's a time to get to know that person on every level except one. Because we know what that level is. We know that will work. And we need to teach them that it's a time where they can focus on the other person's personality. See, this is part of the teenage years and why I bring it up now. Because as our children are moving to those years, you know, they're being attracted to others, but they need to understand how those dynamics work in a healthy fashion. And also in terms of how do I interact with those. And again, if you're going to be serious with someone or you find somebody you care about, you're serious, then you need to use that time that you have together to focus on your personalities. In other words, do the personalities match? What are the other person's ideals? What are their aspirations in life? What are their viewpoints, both political and social? And what about the emotional aspects? Their compatibility in terms of your emotional aspects, and certainly important in terms of their theological views. Even at home, my girls responded really well to it. I was surprised how they latched onto it. But we were talking, you know, these issues come up, and they're not something where, you know, we're going to go, okay, let's sit down, and now I'm going to speak to you about these issues. It's just, you know, these topics come up, or things happen, you know, while they're communicating them at school or things, and that's where you look for the opportunity. You go, okay, the door's open, we're on the subject. Now, as my teenager, I need to instill what wisdom I can impart to them about the care they need to have when they go out there and do these things. And this issue of choosing partners, you know, and they know of people, you know, that the marriage rates that fail and the problems that happen and difficulties in marriage and what are common problems that weave throughout marriages that are having a difficult time. And again, this isn't my own, but it's something I'd heard years ago and I've held on to all these years. And I just wrote it down on a piece of paper. I forget, it was on the back of something that was on our little table, you know, in our family room. I said, well, if you want to know really what you want to be looking for in someone, use the acronym for SPECIAL, SPECIAL. And, you know, and each letter in that, you know, responds or corresponds to a certain aspect that you want to look in your children. And, you know, if you're really interested in these, I'll spell this out more for you later if you want it. But I wrote on the paper, I wrote SPECIAL, but I wrote it in a column fashion, you know. I spell it out and I said, so the S really stands for spiritual. If you are going to be with somebody or you want to get serious about it with somebody, make sure that they have the same spiritual perspective. That is, they have the same theological view. Because you will find great difficulty in your relationship with this person if they're a Muslim and you're a Christian. It's not going to work right off the bat. Of course, we know that's against God's word. That would be violating his word to do that. But nonetheless, they need to have the same, not even if it's just the full end of, you know, one religion versus another, but even within the Christian, some might have a very strong perspective, you know, about certain aspects of the sovereignty of God or whatever, and you have a completely different aspect of it. And even though you might not think it's a big deal, it can be a source of tension and difficulty. So you're looking for someone that basically has the same spiritual, theological view, the same spiritual perspective that you have. And so I went to the P and I said, you know, and I've changed this from what it was originally, kind of made some of these my own, but I said, P, for me, I think is important is that they have the same political perspective. I said, you know, because if you're looking for a mate in the future, you know, and again, we're talking to our teenagers about preparing for that time where they might be looking for a mate, look for someone who has the same political viewpoint, you know, the same social viewpoint and the same, in, kind of enveloped in that, the same fiscal viewpoints that you do. You know, you really don't want to get linked up with somebody who's real loose about using credit cards and living on credit a lot when you're someone that's just like, you know, I just don't like charging anything because then I got to pay for it later and I know people get all kinds of financial trouble this way. You want to make sure you have somebody that's pretty much the same as you are, you know, in terms of having the same perspective. You want to have somebody who has a similar political thing. I don't know how many times, you know, my wife and I are like cemented as one politically, really. We see almost everything identical. But I don't know what I would do if my wife was a full-on liberal. I'd be going crazy at home. I mean, it would cause a problem. We would be fighting way too much about, you know, just little things like that. We'd just be arguing about things. And, you know, that's why I say find somebody who has the same type of political perspective, social perspective that you have. Otherwise, there will be times you will have more sources of tension because you just don't look at the world the same. You know, you use those times together. And I said, in terms of the E, you know, it's the next letter. I said, you want somebody who enjoys the same activities that you're involved in. Look for people that, you know, if you find somebody who just absolutely loves to play golf, and golf can be consuming for people that really enjoy it, but you don't like golf at all. So instead, you like going shopping. Well, you know, all that's fine and dandy, but the only problem that can happen with that is you spend all your time shopping, and he spends all his time golfing, and guess what? You're not doing anything the same. When you have leisure time to be together, you're apart because you enjoy different activities. So I said, you know, in the time when you're with people, if you're like that, look for someone who enjoys similar activities that you do so that, you know, if it does ever come about that, you know, you guys, you know, get closer still, you know, that, again, you have similar interests in that regard. I'll try to move through these. C was, I had it as cultural. Look for somebody who has a similar cultural background because at holiday times, if they don't, you know, you might find conflicts there too. Where, you, for the most part, you know, if basically you were attracted to somebody who is a foreigner from another country. They might have a total different perspective on, you know, on Thanksgivings and Christmases and things like that. And at first we might think, oh, it's no big deal. We just kind of roll with it. But as time goes, it can be a source of tension, a source of problem. You know, these, not that these are critical, that you can't have any violation in any of these things, but you're looking for someone that, you know, you'd be compatible with. The I was intellectual. You want somebody with similar type of an intellectual level that you have. Again, that's not a real big deal. But if you've got somebody who's just a super wizard, really smart, very quick person, and you've got a mate that, you know, maybe is just not quite there, that could be a point that would be a problem. It's like, yeah. I mean, it may not be a problem, but it has a potential for it. You know what I mean? So you look for somebody who has kind of a similar intellectual level that you have. And of course, A is for attraction. I think that's pretty straightforward. You certainly want somebody that you find physically attractive, or that would be a drag. And I said, and then finally, the L is for love. You know, it's someone that you can develop a self-sacrificing love, someone that you can cherish in sickness and in health, for better, for worse, all of those aspects. And so, you know, in getting and talking with them, when looking at this, you know, it was an opportunity to instruct. Obviously, I'm talking about instruction in areas that I wouldn't be instructing my 10-year-old, you know, because it wouldn't do any good. But now as they're moving, well, they're past the teen years now, but they're in the late teen years. These are the kind of things that we want to be instructing. We're talking about life issues that are so important, and we're instilling preparation for what's in that world. Because even though, as we said in our last session, I'm protecting them and sheltering them from some of these things, at the same time, I got to be preparing them. If I just do a bunch of sheltering and protecting and I don't prepare them, then they drop off the end of the cliff and they end up in this place that, man, I don't even know what to do here. This is not anything like what it's like at home. But if we prepare them for what it's like there, they can transition in and they're able to be successful and victorious because they know how to deal with it. I've already been warned about these things. I'm already aware of this stuff that's out there. And I'm aware of what I need to be looking for when I am with somebody, that there is a right passage to a woman and there is the right way in which I can get to know them and that I can develop a relationship with them and understand if this is somebody that I might want to get more serious with because I share so many things in common with them. Those are the things we want to be instructing in these years. And again, in this time, you know, if our daughters or sons find someone who's interested, you know, but they're interested in one thing, you know, they've come across somebody that's like a Shechem, and they're interested in one thing, the idea was there, we just told them, you just tell them, you're not getting the one thing. You don't get the one thing. And then you see if they stick around. Because if they're led by the Spirit, they'll stick around. I doubt that they're led by the Spirit, if that's really what's on their mind. But if they're led by the flesh, they'll take off. And you're all the better for it. Because it wasn't the right one. This isn't the one you want to get involved with. They aren't having the right heart or the right spirit about them. So in conclusion, as I look at the story that we just looked at, it reminds us that we need to pay attention. And it's so important in the early years, right on through the whole time that they're under your roof, to continue to instill those spiritual eternals into their life. Even if your children are young, like I say, and they're years from this, but then when they become teens, you've got to be really active
in terms of instilling these important principles and concepts that we've been talking about and preparing them for what's out there. And second of all, you got to remember that your goal is relationship. And it's never too late to start working on that either. Continue to work on that. And that's why, you know, we've discussed so much about, you know, developing healthy family, you know, trusting relationships with our children, because it is so very important. And again, if they're young, make the relationship that you have today the same ones that you want to have when they're teenagers. So if they're even today at the point that, you know, they get mad at you and they're throwing things at you and doing stuff, not even your kids would do that, but, you know, if it was such, whoever ever hears this message, they have children, like, you got to understand, it's going to be a lot worse when they're a teenager throwing things at you, you know. Then they can start hurting you, you know. So you want to develop that kind of relationship that you have right now that you want to have when they're teenagers as well, the closeness that's there. So the spiritual eternals are important, and the trusting relationships. And finally, we want to make sure we invest in those character issues that matter most. Because if we will do that, then we will reap the reward and they'll have victory. You see, because we've trained them and we've prepared them. We've prepared them for potential Shechems. We've prepared them for those cities that are like that, and they're able to enter it knowing, I know what to do if I get in this situation. Trust in God and flee if it's like that. Because the issues I think that's really important is that there are so many people that, as I said at the beginning, they fear the teen years. And they think, well, you can't really do anything when they become teenagers. No, man, parents, we still make a difference. And if we can, we want to keep trying and striving to make that difference in their life, even then, and don't stop. Don't stop. Because if we don't instill it, we'll reap the regrets because we didn't repair them. And for here, we want to reap the victory, not reap the regrets. And as we saw in our last study, we all want to get to the end and see that, you know what? I did it like God said I was supposed to do it. I followed His plan. I followed His purpose for parenting my children. And now I have rest and peace because God's way is the right way. And it works every time. Let's pray. Again, Lord, as we come to an end now of our series and, Lord, of this seminar, we just pray, God, that You would just continue to encourage us. And Lord, help us to be strong and courageous in all of these things. Lord, help us to be consistent. Help us to remain active. And Lord, we just ask that You would bless those efforts that we have, and that they would not fall short in any way, but Lord, that there would be great fruit that would come from it. Not fruit just for our own sake, not fruit just so that we would have peace, but Lord, the fruit that would be exhibited there so that our children would be used powerfully by You. And that You could use them a mighty way because they have the self-control and they have the levels of responsibility and maturity that You're looking for in young women and men, and that You can use as soldiers to further Your kingdom. And so, Lord, even as we look at these teenage years and some of the difficulties of the dynamics that are surrounded around that, Lord, that You'd again give us wisdom in that. Help us even as they're young to prepare them for these years. And then, Lord, help us to be on our knees, to continue to seek You, to protect them from the Shechems, to protect them from the influences that are out there of this world, and Lord, that they'd be preserved through it. And so, Father, again, we thank You for Your word, and we're so grateful, Lord, that You've made it so clear, and really You've made the message to us simple if we would just follow it. And again, Lord, we thank You for that in Jesus' name. Amen.